Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online. We're at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. This is Trumpet Radio Live. It's Wednesday today, the Wednesday edition. Turns out Tuesday, yesterday, was pretty violent. A few stories to talk about in regard to that. Also, a story about the Royal Navy. They are continuing to downsize. Not a good thing. We'll have more details about that. And a few other stories to get to today, including the media upset at Donald Trump again. Are you surprised? I'm not. That and more this edition, Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link there at thetrumpet.com as well. And we'd appreciate it if you followed us on Twitter at kpcgfm. And any comments or questions or anything you'd like to send, you can send those along to comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, here today as well. Big story locally yesterday, even made some national headlines, Oklahoma City. An airline employee was shot and killed down at Will Rogers Airport.
I saw that, and I could actually picture the different locations they were talking about in the airport.
Yeah, it's anytime something like that happens, especially at an airport, you know, it's really a serious deal. They say at this time they don't believe the shooting was random. They think it was targeted, but they say it's too early in the investigation to figure out the exact motive, although the crime does appear to be premeditated. They had some thought back and forth, maybe that it was a former employee or something. They're not sure. The man that shot the other fellow, he killed himself then, and they found him in his truck. But they had to shut down the airport for, well, most of the afternoon and into the evening. I think they finally started opening things up and had their press conference at like 6:45 last night. I was watching some of it on TV. And anytime there's a terrible situation like that, it's bad, obviously, on every level. But particularly when it's at an airport, because everyone had to lock, you know, stay in place. They didn't know where the shooter was. And then some people were on planes, and they had to sit there, you know, for I don't know how long, 3, 4, 5 hours, which is aggravating. But, you know, they have to do their job with the law enforcement.
That's right. I believe the shooter, it seemed like he actually knew the Southwest Airlines employee's schedule. So he knew when he'd be walking out to the employee parking area. And so he just basically hunted him down. It was like he was waiting for him. And then I believe that happened around 1 o'clock yesterday in the afternoon. And they had people stuck in the airport, stuck on planes. And also, I think Southwest Airlines stopped all of their flights to and from Oklahoma City for the rest of the day.
Yeah, really, really messed up a lot of the flow of things. Anytime you have a situation like that, and then of course, obviously, the tragedy of a murder suicide there, it appears. So that happened at the airport yesterday, and of course, you know, everyone's on edge because of terror attacks. You don't know what's going on or who might be involved in things. So that's kind of the age in which we live in. And so that was kind of a shocking story. You're always shocked to hear that, particularly when it's a place you know or it's close by, like you say. You know, you see the video or the pictures, or you hear the description and you think, oh, I've walked right through there, you know. So
yeah, it's almost haunting in a way to be able to picture the locations they were talking about. I believe also the guy who was shot is the father of a current Kansas City Chiefs football player. So
yeah,
you can imagine the tragedy just going to a lot of different places.
Yeah, the man that was killed, he played football at OU. And his children, I think, went to OU as well, and a lot of them were athletes, and his one son's a long snapper for the Kansas City Chiefs. So, yeah, you never expect things like that. You get up and you think it's a normal day, and all of a sudden, you know, tragedy strikes. So I'm sure they'll have more details on that, but sorry, there's a ladybug on the microphone. It just I looked down, and the thing was right in my face. It made me jump. I'm okay.
Good.
I could have just ignored it, but I wanted to share it with the audience. It's why I recoiled.
You were startled, that's for sure.
Something's crawling down there by your face. You don't know what that is. I had one crawling on me yesterday on my neck. you know, in my office here, they must be kind of flying around, and you know, you feel something kind of creeping across your neck, and mm-hmm. you feel it. Thankfully, it's just a ladybug. I'm glad they're not venomous, at least not to me.
A couple of days ago, my wife said, "Oh," and then she was just pointing at a ladybug that was across the room, but she almost gave me a heart attack. That's not that big of a deal, I don't think.
Oh, that's funny. Maybe she's one of those that really gets nervous about small things, but she'd see like an anaconda and be like, "Ah, I think there's a snake over there."
She's actually taken a video of like a probably borderline poisonous snake from about 2 feet away and then showed it to me recently. So I think she is one of those people.
She doesn't understand what can actually be a danger to you. What's just, I guess, I don't know, ladybugs are kind of friendly, I suppose. They like to get close to you, if nothing else. So anyway, that time we get different things depending on the time of the year. You get spiders, and then they go away, and then you get the ladybugs. I'll take the ladybugs instead of the spiders.
That's definitely preferable to possibly poisonous spiders.
Yeah, I had a spider bite me on the arm. I think it's a spider. It bit me the other night when I was sleeping, I think, and it looks better today. Yesterday it was looking a little rough, and you know, you start going online, and then you see all the terrible pictures, and then you start feeling like you're sweating profusely.
You're self-diagnosing on WebMD.
Don't do it. Don't do it. It only makes you feel bad. So, but I think it's getting better. But if I don't make it, if you just hear silence, you'll know that the
we all know why.
The spider won, or the ladybug, the combination of the two.
The ladybug.
Man killed by ladybug. Not a story you hear a lot. One other story that's pretty serious from yesterday. This is out in Utah. Bizarre situation. Five Utah students were stabbed in the boys' locker room. A teen is detained in that stabbing. They said a group of boys at the Utah High School were changing Tuesday morning into their gym clothes for physical education class, and a straight-A student pulled out a knife in the locker room and stabbed five of his classmates, sending the injured running for their lives. The 16-year-old suspect, he doesn't have any record of disciplinary trouble, and he stabbed himself as well and was cornered by the school workers until a police officer assigned to Mountain View High School got to the locker room and subdued him with a taser. The five victims are all expected to survive, hospital officials said Tuesday afternoon, but the two most seriously injured were in critical but stable condition. They have no idea why this guy did it. The parents don't know. I suppose they're talking to him to figure it out, just sort of out of the blue. I'm sure obviously when they go look at it, they'll find some reasoning there, but really strange. And again, it's a knife, not a gun. I mean, he pulled the knife out and did some damage, so kind of out of the blue, really strange situation there.
Yeah, stories like that definitely make you look over your shoulder out in public, especially because, I mean, even when you're sitting down on a plane or something, and obviously you have people sitting directly behind you the entire time, it does take a certain level of trust knowing that someone behind you isn't a maniac either.
It's really strange things can happen sometimes, and thankfully this doesn't happen too often. Usually when you hear about situations with knives, it's usually like in China, where apparently they don't have guns available, it seems like, but then they'll have knife attacks. So, you know, to kind of pick your situation there, but some people just do some strange things. So usually they'll know, like, okay, this guy had some problems, he was a troublemaker, people were picking on him, but they just have no idea why this happened. So really strange. I don't know if they didn't have metal detectors or how he got that into the school, but that's interesting.
Right. I don't know about most schools, but a lot of them have started putting in metal detectors. There are probably still quite a few that don't have anything like that and would then be vulnerable to something like this.
When I was in high school, we didn't have any sort of detectors or anything. We would have random locker inspections, which everybody get out there and open your lockers. And I don't even think they check too carefully. They kind of walk by and look at it and be like, all right, put your stuff back in there. So I've never heard of anybody having anything weird. So not, I don't know.
I could actually tell at school some kids were terrified when those days came. Yeah. And I would just be totally relaxed, obviously. I didn't have anything bad in my locker. I was like, hey, you want some of my lunch? That's about all that's in here.
I'm sad to admit this. This isn't a good thing. But the only thing you'd really find in my locker were, you know, books, textbooks. And there were some that I literally never took out the whole year. Like I put them in there at the beginning of the school year. And then the last day, I was like, oh, yeah, that's... And I probably should have, but a lot of times we didn't totally use them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had to cover them. You had to put the, like, you could either buy a cover or if you're cheap like me, just get a paper bag and put it over there. That was like the first day of school. Cover your books, and then people write their graffiti on it. Write Metallica or whatever they wanted to write on the cover, or who they liked, which they kept crossing out as the year went on, and put a new one down, a big list. So, yeah, that was my locker experience at school.
Nothing too detailed, nothing too, I don't know, controversial in your locker.
No, nothing in there, except some books and maybe the random can of soda, but that was about it. Anyway, who cares? I could go on and on about the lockers, but it makes no difference.
I actually miss having lockers now that you mention it, for some reason.
Get a work locker.
I know. That'd be a good idea.
put it in your office, even though you don't need one, and a little water fountain.
Just slam it every time.
Yeah.
It's disrupting everyone in the office with me.
Once an hour, you got to go there, and we had 4 minutes between classes.
Yeah, that's pretty rushed.
Yeah.
Feel bad for anyone who has to use the restroom.
You had to plan your day. I mean, for sure, because especially in high school, it was a 3-story building. And so if you were in one, especially if you were on one side of it and you had to get to the other side and you had 4 minutes, you had to get over there quick. Mm-hmm. So they had no mercy.
No locker time in 4 minutes.
Sure.
If you're going across the school.
In some cases, you couldn't stop there. You just had to keep on moving. So, if you've driven around here in the local Oklahoma City area, probably any big city, you've noticed panhandlers. There's certain parts of town where the panhandlers are always out and they're asking for money. And I've seen a few lately. They're always in the same sort of parts of Oklahoma City area. And sometimes they try to be entertaining. There's one guy that likes to throw his hat up and catch it on his head. He's pretty good. Actually made me try it at home, and I was not as successful as he was. So he influenced me in that way. I saw a family a while ago, which was a little strange. It was like appeared to be a mother and a daughter. They both were dressed decently, but they just said, like, we need help and we need money and so forth. So I'm never one to give money to those people. In most cases, I just lock the door because I don't know what they're going to do. Because I have had people approach me kind of out of the blue, and it's kind of scared me a little bit. But the thing you always have to wonder, I suppose, is this legitimate? Do these people really need money, or is this a scam? Well, they did a little inside story out in Los Angeles. And they found that the panhandlers were all organized. It was a scam. It was all part of like a business deal that they were running. They say panhandlers caught driving rental cars, traveling around town to solicit cash. This is a story on the station out there in Los Angeles, CBS 2. They say from San Fernando Valley to the Santa Clarita Valley, David Goldstein's undercover cameras captured similar-looking groups of panhandlers with children. Some were holding kids small enough to even be breastfeeding, and all were holding signs claiming to be down and out. Yeah, you don't see too many signs that say, I'm down and out. I'm down and out. They usually say something, but we get the point. He says, but are they as needy as they seem? Goldstein watched them outside shopping areas all over town with similar signs reading, please help, lost my job, I have 3 kids, and the like. Residents believe they're all working together, and they're fed up with it. It's a well-organized group, no question about it, said one local. And so they did some investigation, and they found out that in a lot of cases, they were not what they seemed, driving brand-new cars, driving SUVs, going from one area to another. Just despicable.
It's almost like generosity in any way is discouraged now, because you can never tell who is being genuine or who is faking it. A lot of the time, it seems like in town, the light will be red for about 3 minutes, and every time my car is right next to the person who is asking for money, which is pretty awkward if I'm not planning on giving money. Occasionally I'll give a little bit, but just because I feel weird being right next to the person for that long. But it's just, I try to avoid eye contact usually, and they're just staring at me.
There may be cases where people might need some help. But the thing about that too is I always think, well, there's better ways to go about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could do something a little more productive with your time. What are you going to spend the rest of your life standing on the corner looking for a handout? I mean, there's probably better ways to handle it. You should roll down a window and ask for change. You got change for a 10? I'm not going to give you anything. I just need some change. But so anyway, I mean, there probably are legitimate situations, and don't mean to be too callous to that. But at the same time, there are a lot of stories like this where it turns out it's a money-making deal for these people in some cases.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where I'm always somewhat suspicious when I see people like that. But I think sometimes in the situation, I'm a little bit soft. Mm. Like one time I saw a whole family out in front of Target, but I was already driving by too fast, so I didn't stop for them anyway. But it just that's sad. I mean, just have your whole family out there, even if you're faking it, to drag your whole family out there with you all day.
Yeah. Well, in this story, they said they found people like that. That was like mother-daughter teams, like they were working together. And so, you know, it's a bad sign if you're just walking around minding your own business and people are trying to give you money. Then you got to question your wardrobe decisions. No, I don't. What are you giving me money for? So I'm not totally heartless, though. When the firefighters are out there with the big boots, I put money in that.
Mm-hmm.
Doing a service for the community. Appreciate them.
Yeah, that is really the key, is if they're doing a service or, you know, trying to entertain you in some way, then maybe you could give some money.
There was one guy I saw in the corner not too long ago, and it was hot. I mean, it was like 100 degrees, and he's out there, and he was a big guy. So he's obviously eating well. But he was out there, and he was, like, wearing black clothing and, like, sweatshirts and, like, a lot of clothes, and he was dancing. He had his headphones on, expensive headphones, by the way. And he was like doing the robot and these different moves. I think he wanted money. Maybe he was just hanging out, but he appeared to want money. And the only thing I thought was, wow, that guy must be just dying. It's so hot out there. Got to give it to him for that, I guess.
Right. There's a guy in the Charlotte, North Carolina airport who is always playing a piano out there in public. And a lot of people give him money. But that's kind of the thing. You're playing pleasant music while people are milling about.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's something where people would want to pay you.
Yeah, that is a nice thing to see. So I'm sure people have different opinions about it as far as what do you do with panhandlers. But in some cases, like they've shown here in the L.A. area, it's not legitimate. So
in a way, some of those people, even if they're fakers, they kind of need some pity because it just is. It's sad to see someone who has no moral compass and is willing to just lie like that when they probably are making good money if it's a scam.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there are cases. I read a story years ago about people that would do it in the really wealthy areas. Like they'd go down to a Wall Street and they found that a lot of times the businessmen were just embarrassed and didn't want to be hassled. And they knew they were probably carrying cash. And so people could go down there and go up to them and kind of cause a scene, sometimes get a $100 bill. And there were cases where people were living in nice houses in the suburbs, driving in, dressing up, going down there, putting on the spiel, getting paid and going back home. And they were living a pretty good lifestyle off of it. So I'm sure not everybody's like that, but there were some cases like that.
Yeah, up there in Portland, Oregon, it was almost like being homeless was some sort of a social club. I mean, they would just be hanging out, playing games, making each other peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, things like that, where, like, maybe, I don't know, maybe they're better off than I might think.
Where did you get that peanut butter from and that jelly? That's expensive stuff. There's a, you know, there's a lot of, very touchy feelings about race-related issues. And LeBron James is jumping in the mix, a famous basketball player for the Cleveland Cavaliers, quite a good basketball player. And he's got some pretty thin skin, apparently. He says he's lost respect for Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson is a very famous NBA coach, Coach Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal. I think he's won, boy, I want to say 11 championships as a coach. Is that right? He's won a couple as a player, too.
Right, Phil Jackson won 6 with the Bulls and 5 with the Lakers, I believe. So
yeah,
probably 11.
I think.
One with the Knicks, at least.
Yeah, he won in his playing days. Yeah, so anyway, a lot of championships. People respect him. He's now the general manager, I believe, for the Knicks. Anyway, they had an interview, and they were asking Phil Jackson some questions, and he was talking about LeBron James. Now, LeBron James, if you know much about him, a lot of his friends from high school came with him. They're not good enough to play, but he uses them as like business managers and that type of thing. He trusts them. Apparently, they've done a pretty good job for him over the years, but it's kind of his group. And Phil Jackson was responding or talking about LeBron James and his group, and he called them a posse. So LeBron James quite upset. And LeBron James explained his problem with Phil Jackson. He doesn't respect him anymore, he says. He has a problem with the posse label referring to him and his business associates. He says to use that label, and if you go and read the definition, we will, actually, of what the word posse is. It's not what I've built over my career. It's not what I stand for. I don't know what he stands for. It's not what my family stands for, and I believe the only reason he used the word is because it's young African-Americans trying to make a difference. Well, he said we should look up the word posse, so we will. Posse means this, 3 possible meanings according to Merriam-Webster. It can be a group of people who were gathered together by a sheriff in the past to help search for a criminal. I don't think he meant that. A group of people who are together for a particular purpose, a group of friends. Well, that's unacceptable. Use that type of language. He doesn't even know what it means. And he's saying that it's some sort of a racially motivated comment, and that's the big headline today. It's just foolishness.
Mm-hmm.
He said, yeah, they're a posse. They're a group, and they are. Could he have used a better word? I don't know. But the actual meaning of the word posse is a group of friends. They are his friends.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the problem?
And they are gathered together for a purpose. So the last two definitions directly apply to him. The first one isn't derogatory at all because it implies that you're on the side of law enforcement. But he has recently spoken out against law enforcement quite foolishly, I would say. And so maybe he takes that as an insult.
I don't know. One of his, one of the members of his crew there, can we say that, is Maverick
Entourage. Entourage. Are these all derogatory terms?
I don't know. Maverick Carter, one of his buddies from high school that works with him. He is quoted here saying, it's the word posse and the characterization I take offense to. If he would have said LeBron and his agent, LeBron and his business partners, or LeBron and his friends, that's one thing. Yet because you're young and black, he can use that word. We're grown men. Okay. He said, if he had said LeBron and his friends, that's one thing. One of the definitions of posse is a group of friends. I mean, they're just making something out of nothing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the lack of education is apparent here. It's funny how they're telling people to look up the definitions when clearly even they haven't done that.
don't know what the definition is. And the other thing that's funny, somebody was commenting on the story, and all the comments I saw were like, are you kidding? Is this a thing? Apparently, Maverick Carter, he has a show on CNBC that he produces called Cleveland Hustle. Which is, that's not a necessarily great term. That implies some sort of a scam.
Right. That's way more derogatory than posse.
So, anyway, you can't say posse. They're mad about that now. So it just highlights, I think, everyone's looking to be offended. What are you offended about? They're a group of friends gathered together for a common purpose. What's wrong with that?
It directly describes what they are. There's nothing offensive about that at all, but I'm going to guess he's going to get a lot of sympathy from different media outlets for playing the victim.
They're assuming some intent, which isn't even correct by definition of the word, and then just running with it. Ridiculous.
Phil Jackson is one of the most laid-back, hippie-type people. I don't think he even knows how to have hatred for anybody.
It's bizarre. So that's just the state of things that we live in. It's interesting, or the state of the society in some ways. If you've ever tried to lose weight, which I think a lot of people do try to do from time to time, sometimes it's hard to do. Here's some common mistakes when trying to lose weight, according to people that have done it, not done it well, and then found some success. So you can take this for what it's worth. Here are some things they said that were mistakes. One person said that they ate when they weren't hungry. That was one of their big mistakes. Easy to do.
It is, especially if you're sitting around and not doing much at the time. If you're not busy, it's really easy to do that.
Yeah, eating out of boredom. Another one says they didn't watch their portion sizes. So that's probably legitimate, although I think in most cases it's also what they're eating too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone's like, you know, I shouldn't have eaten that extra portion of green beans. I don't know that that's going to make a big difference.
It's probably going to make a difference in a good way, if anything.
Yeah, right. I should have stopped at 3 pieces of broccoli, but you know me. Can't control those portion sizes.
My wife actually got sick once from eating too many beets, so maybe certain vegetables are not the best for you in too big of portions. You never know.
Was it before you guys were married?
Maybe just don't go over the top. Yes.
Okay.
I wouldn't have let her do that.
You got to calm down. You got to calm down on the beets.
Like, why do you even like those? Why do we even buy those? Why do we spend my money to buy the beets?
I was thinking of Michael Jackson's song Beat It. That would have been a good one to play at the time. Another one says that they didn't lift weights. They were trying to do a lot of running and so forth, and they did lose some weight, but they felt like they didn't lose what they needed to until they incorporated a little bit of weightlifting, which I've heard helps.
Mm-hmm.
Get you stronger. Muscle burns more calories than fat does, and it's just good for you.
It does increase the appetite, which increases the metabolism just by building muscle, so that is a way to get some pounds off.
Yeah. Another person says that they didn't understand how certain foods affected them. I think they were kind of talking about maybe some allergens, but that could be a thing, I suppose. And they were allergic to Oreos, I guess, as well.
Devastating.
I think everyone's allergic to Oreos. Another person says, I started my day off with sugar. They ate like those yogurt cups, and they didn't really pay attention to the labels, and it was like 28 grams of sugar in those.
Part of your good breakfast.
Right. Yeah, right next to the orange juice and the Captain Crunch or whatever it is. And then another person says they didn't read nutrition labels. They were just assuming and eating and not really thinking about what they were eating. And I think that's probably one of the biggest ones, especially in our society today where, you know, they have a picture on the package and you say, well, that looks good. But if you don't read what's in it or don't know what the words mean, that can be a problem.
Exactly. I don't think I've ever checked a label to when I've bought something. I have to rely on smart women to check the labels for me.
Yeah, one of the things they say that's really a good kind of rule of thumb is, well, two things. One is to shop the outside of the grocery store. I mean, not the, you know, like outside the building, but not go into the inter aisles, but more of the peripheral area, I guess, where the actual growing live stuff is. And then also, if you look at the labels and there's a lot of ingredients, it's probably not for the best. We were at Walmart years ago, my wife and I, and she was buying some vegetables and stuff. And admittedly, some of them were a little bit like, what is that thing? Things I hadn't seen. So, you know, if you go through the checkout, they've got to like, they can't scan it. You know, they have got to look in the book. And once you pull the book out, anything could happen. They got to look up the vegetable, see what it costs, type it in. So a lady there who didn't appear to be in the best health, she just got frustrated and she said, I don't eat anything green. I thought, well, I'm not surprised. Green Skittles, maybe.
Pretty much a good guideline is to check the price. If you have two items that are the same thing but a different brand and one is way more expensive, it's a good indicator that it's usually going to be a more healthy version.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, that's one of the challenges of trying to eat well is that they try to get the price so high. So, but anyway, there's things that can be done there. There's a really good segment on the Trumpet Hour today about exercise and some good information there. So make sure you listen for that. The Trumpet Hour program, it's coming up today on KPCG, or you can get the archive at kpcg.fm if you can't catch it live. Well, Grant, of course, this happened. If you this guy in Oklahoma got caught speeding, he was going 208 miles an hour. 208 down the roads here in Oklahoma.
Forgot he wasn't on the NASCAR racetrack.
I didn't even know cars could go that fast. 208. An Oklahoma man was arrested on Saturday after leading police on a 208 mile per hour chase. 19-year-old Hector Frary first tripped a radar gun doing 84 miles per hour on the Kilpatrick Turnpike, which if you're from around Oklahoma City, you know where that is, before speeding away as police tried to pull him over. According to the Oklahoma Highway Patrol, his 2011 Ford Mustang, that's a plug for the Mustang, was then clocked doing 176 and then 208 as he tried to elude the cops that were coming after him. He finally stopped his car at a red light. Well, that's nice. He's going 208 and he's like, whoop, red light, better slow down.
He's very selective in what laws he chooses to keep.
Yeah. He dropped his keys out of the window and was arrested and later charged with reckless driving and felony eluding. Felony eluding?
So he's being a dodger.
Yeah. That's a great term if you were like doing color commentary on a football game. They can't tackle him. He should be arrested for felony eluding. I put that one in the memory banks.
Hopefully someone has picked up on this story and can take that to heart.
Yeah, I actually saw the story last night on the local news, and they said a man he got a ticket for going like 170 over the limit. And I was like, 170? I almost fell out of my chair. But yeah, I mean, if he's going through like a, you know, 25 or a 30 mile an hour zone, mm-hmm. going at 208, that's amazing. It's amazing he didn't flip that car over.
Yeah, it's almost like when you're going that fast and you hit a pebble, you could go flying.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, boy, you know, you hit somebody. There are times where you're out on the interstate and, you know, like let's say we're going on like I-35, which isn't far from where we are right here at the studios. And, you know, I think it's 75 is the speed limit. Most people, self-included, probably going between 75 and 80, somewhere in that ballpark. And sometimes I've had people go by me like I'm just sitting there. Mm-hmm. And you think, how fast is that guy going? You know, I'm
gotta
going
to be over 100 usually.
Gotta be. Gotta be. So I don't think it's that unusual for people to go that fast. But 208, that's next level. So, wow, I can't believe that his Ford could get up to that. Pretty good.
Well, he was only going 84, and then he speeds up to over 200, which is a good, also really an obvious sign that he must have had something else going on. He must have not had a license or had something in his car that was illegal.
Yeah, he must have been worried about something because otherwise you pay the ticket. Mm-hmm. 84, you know? Of course, now I don't know what zone he was going through at that time. He was clocked at 84. Well, they said Kilpatrick Turnpike, so he would have been going like, what, 9 over the limit maybe?
Well, I think, yeah, on some parts, though, Kilpatrick's only like 60 miles per hour, so it could have been quite a lot depending on where he was.
Yeah.
But even still, the fine's not going to be over maybe $300.
Yeah.
If that.
That's amazing. Well, now he's in a lot of trouble. Reckless driving, felony eluding. Thankfully, didn't hit anybody. But wow. Yeah, 208 miles an hour. That's almost as fast as Abraham Blondeau's truck goes. He's got that older truck. He's making his way into the studio here. That's why I'm making fun of him. And he's not on the mic yet, so he can't retort.
He's daintily stepping over the minefield of wires back there.
Now he is. Now he's here. This guy was going 208 miles an hour, got caught speeding here in Oklahoma.
Not too surprised.
Ford Mustang, 2011 Ford Mustang. How fast does your truck register at? Like, what does the speedometer say?
70 miles an hour.
Yeah. It's old. It actually has wagon wheels on it, which is...
That's right, yeah. It's I bought it from an old Sooner who was here during the land run. So.
Yeah. It was uncovered during the Dust Bowl, and the soil went away. Yeah. But a lot of times they go faster than you think they would, but I forget what mine goes up to. Like, just on a speedometer, I think it is over 200, but I've never gotten anywhere ballpark to that. And I just have a Honda Accord. maybe 180? I don't know. But I've never broached 100 even.
Wasn't that the car we talked about a while ago? Wasn't it a Honda or something else that you would never expect would go that fast?
Yeah.
What was it, like a neon?
No, yeah, yeah.
What's that called?
It was a Dodge Neon.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
That's what it was.
I was hoping it was a Prius.
Yeah, no. No, I don't think they go. Their battery shuts off if they go over 70. No, I don't know. One other story here from the Of Course This Happens segment. Hundreds walk out of Stanford classes, demand sanctuary campus. So they had more than 500 Stanford University students, faculty, and staff members walked out of classrooms and ducked out of jobs, of course, Tuesday in a protest of the policies of Donald Trump. He hasn't even done anything yet, and they're all mad. It's amazing. But anyway, they want some sort of sanctuary campus where everyone can just be there, no matter if you're legal or not, and attend Stanford University. How about if you don't pay? Can I go there and get a degree and not pay for it?
Yeah, you know what? If... the Stanford students who pay tens of thousands of dollars a year to be there. If that's how they want to use their time, go ahead. But at the same time, it is amazing. I don't think there's ever been protests against a president-elect who actually hasn't done anything yet. Just unbelievable. And I hope that people feel safe about the future of American leadership, because that's apparently that's who those people are.
Well, yeah, it is quite amazing that... there's so much upheaval, I guess, people up in arms over what the media has told them could potentially happen. And all he's talked about that I've heard is actually upholding the laws that are already on the books.
Yeah.
So I don't see what the big, you know, to-do is. If they want to change the laws, well, there's ways to talk about it. But you can't just change the laws by making a sign and running around town.
Have you seen those people, too? They have, like, communist flags, a Mexico flag, flags of Islamic nations, all these signs with tons of profanity on it. They don't even dare show their faces, so they put bandanas on. Just really low lives without jobs is what it looks like.
Well, really what they should do is they should charter a flight and say, okay, everybody that wants to go to a sanctuary campus, we've set one up, and it's in Tehran. Go ahead and get on and... enjoy it.
Well, it's true. You won't find an American flag anywhere where they're protesting.
They could join in and, you know, burn the leaders in effigy like they like to do over there all the time.
See right. How that goes.
Yeah, it'll be some kind of sanctuary. I'm not sure if that's the one they want.
Well, and a paying for to get them back anyway, paying the ransom. Key David programs coming up here in a bit on KPCG, as well as the Trump Daily Radio Show. Richard Palmer today from Edstone, England. And he talks a little bit more about some of the aftermath of Donald Trump's victory and some about what's going on over in Europe as well, as they're very close to that area and keeping an eye on it. A lot happening in Europe as well, so make sure you listen for that Trump Daily Radio Show. It'll be coming up here in a bit on KPCG, and if you can't get it live, the archives are at kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us here, Trumpet Radio Live. And again, you can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm, or you can email us comments@kpcg.fm. We appreciate those. Abraham, you've got a Telegraph here article Royal Navy to lose missiles and be left only with guns. That doesn't seem like a good thing, especially in light of the fact that Vladimir Putin just sailed some of his military right past them.
Right. Yeah, this is a pretty frustrating story to read, especially, as you mentioned, Russia sailed their aircraft carrier through the English Channel. And in light of Donald Trump announcing that there are, under his presidency, he's going to expand the U.S. Navy to 350 ships. So in light of both of those facts, it was just found out yesterday that the Royal Navy said that the Royal Navy will be left without anti-ship missiles for about 2 years because of cost cuts and budget problems. So in other words, all their destroyers, frigates, anything with those anti-ship missiles that can be used in combat against another another opposing ship, all those missiles are going to be retired in 2018. It's called the Harpoon missile. They're going to be retired in 2018 without replacement.
Yeah, it's in a time when a lot of nations are arming more and more and more. You hear the UK just seems to be following this a trend of demilitarizing in a lot of ways. There's been a lot of stories like this over the past few years of them continually downgrading. And they're not in the EU anymore. They won't be. So what are they? How are they going to defend themselves? They're not expecting anyone to ever threaten them again? Or what's the thinking there?
Well, that's the thing that's a lot of experts are frustrated at this decision. And here's a quote. Naval sources said the decision was like Nelson deciding to get rid of his cannons and going back to muskets.
Right.
Because the Ministry of Defense said that now British warships, after 2018, they can't stand up to Russian or Chinese ships anymore. So if they ever came into conflict, the British ships would be useless because the guns they have, they're like 30mm, 50 caliber weapons or bigger cannons. They have a very limited range. The Harpoon anti-ship missile had a range of about 80 miles. But all the Russian ships, they have missiles that can go 100 miles, so do the Chinese. And so they could get hit by these anti-ship missiles without even seeing where the enemy ship is. And so this is just madness because it's like giving, it's like sending a bunch of soldiers into a battleground with plastic knives and say, oh, go fight some enemies with automatic machine guns. That's essentially the same level of army readiness the Royal Navy will have. And especially when you're an island, you left the EU, and you're expecting your allies to protect you, and that's never a good thing. I mean, that's just a basic lesson of history.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because back in the 50s, in the Eisenhower administration, which is, I guess, considered the golden decade of the U.S., one of the things that he did, I mean, he always tried to diffuse tensions. He didn't want to get back into wars. But everyone knew, no matter what the talk in the media was, everyone knew that the U.S. military was far superior to everyone else's. And so knowing that, we knew it, our enemies knew it, it kind of just kept everybody in place. Because as much as people would talk or have a lot of bluster, especially Russia, they knew that they couldn't compete with the military. But if they think they can, that changes things. And this changes things for the UK.
Oh, yeah, in a major way. I mean, this, especially with the history of the Royal Navy, they are the probably of the greatest traditions in the world, just going back hundreds of years. But now it's a laughingstock compared. Even nations like tiny little nations in Europe, they have the same capability as the UK now. And so if the UK wants to be respected as a world power, they're one of their greatest military assets absolutely has no capability anymore. And as you mentioned, although Britain doesn't really engage in efforts internationally as much anymore, I mean, just let's take one situation, the Falkland Islands. What if the Argentinian government decides to go ahead and take the Falkland Islands? We don't have, well, Britain, they're in the midst of building two new aircraft carriers that are pretty advanced, but those won't be finished for a couple more years. And so in the meantime, you have to send an old navy with no missiles, very little capability, and Britain couldn't even recover the Falkland Islands if they wanted to. And that's just 20 years ago, barely. So it's just a sad state of affairs. And it just shows, I think, a lack of reality with those planning these things in Whitehall. in Britain, because if you're willing to completely gutter your Navy, they must have pretty strong faith in Donald Trump or Europe.
Or they must really trust Russia and China for some reason, and there's been no indication for why they would do that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, well, that's so basically, I mean, it's they're saying it's just a budgetary issue more than anything else, or is it they're just don't care anymore? I mean, it's hard to say. Is it just we don't have the money? It is what it is, or is it, you know, is there more of a anti-military sentiment that's there?
I think it's a combination of the two, especially with the problem with post-war Britain was the creation of the welfare state in Britain, and so the substance of that welfare state did take away a lot of money from the military, and there still is that struggle today. Where do we spend our money, on domestic programs or on the military? And for a long time, it's especially been the Royal Navy that has suffered a lot of budget cuts. And although they are in the midst of building those new aircraft carriers, that's probably where most of the Navy budget went, and in it acquiring the new F-35s for a new fleet air arm, etc. All those things probably took most of the budget, and so they're phasing out these Harpoon missiles, and they don't have a replacement for them.
Well, hopefully they're building these two new aircraft carriers. Hopefully they work, right? Because that's one of the problems with the U.S. lately. We built all these things, spent a ton of money, and it's like, oh, it doesn't totally work.
Right.
It's in the shop. Where's that new aircraft carrier? Ah, it's back in the shop again.
We've been getting ripped off by the mechanics we've contracted in this country. It's just amazing how we ask for a state-of-the-art submarine, and then they're putting the cheapest parts together, right, and kind of welding them over to look like maybe they're high quality.
It's unbelievable. You know, you can read the rest of this article at the Telegraph. I combined the two. The autograph. The article at the Telegraph. Royal Navy to lose missiles and be left with only guns. In sort of related to that, I guess, if you want to talk about boats, I saw this really interesting story today. There's this boat some guy made, like a houseboat. He's from Canada. And it washed ashore in Ireland. They just found it. Did you see that story?
Yeah, I did.
It's pretty weird.
Yeah, they're puzzled at how it crossed the Atlantic Ocean and why no one's in it and why it's suddenly just appeared there.
Yeah, I guess on the inside it's written, the guy wrote his name, I can't remember what his name was, and he said he was giving it to homeless people. But they said the guy's actually been in the headlines over the years. He's kind of always trying to do solar-powered stuff, and he invented a solar-powered bicycle, which I'm like, well, isn't that just a bike you pedal? Like, what's I'm sure there's more to it, but I'm like, solar powered bicycle. Anyway, probably an electric bike, solar powered. But so he tried to do the same with his boat, I guess. And then the last time somebody saw it, it was like in Newfoundland. And all of a sudden, it's in Ireland, just sitting there. Nobody on board. Nobody knows where the guy is. So pretty interesting mystery.
Maybe a voyage of the homeless, the people he gave it away to. Cross the Atlantic on their own.
I don't know. They didn't make it. It'd be interesting to make a movie out of that.
Right.
Yeah, the adventures of, you know, but it made it all the way. So it's just, I just think that's neat. The idea of like seeing a ship that washed ashore. Where did this come from?
Right. Yeah. That's, I remember watching a documentary on the Bermuda Triangle, and a U.S. Navy ship came across this abandoned sailboat there, and they sailed it back to Florida. But they couldn't figure out what happened to anyone there. They just found this abandoned ship in the middle of nowhere. It was just like a private sailboat. So it is always fascinating when you see those things, because in modern times, we don't necessarily have the same problems as ships being stranded at sea and on all those sorts of mysteries. But the harrowing tales of the houseboat would certainly be an interesting movie.
Yeah. There's another really interesting write-up that Grant, you've got for us. This is from InfoWars. They always like to find some choice nuggets. Media has hissy fit over Trump attending private dinner with his family. They're outraged. Lack of transparency. That's what they're crying.
It's almost like they're trying to make us make the connection between Mr. Obama's most transparent administration ever and their headline, oh, Mr. Trump is not transparent because he went out to dinner with his family 4 blocks from his Trump Tower with the Secret Service in tow, probably 12 vehicles. And yet, because he didn't tell the press he was going, they're concerned for his safety.
Yeah, I don't think that's exactly what the issue is. But, you know, this is what we can expect, I think, sadly. any chance to belittle, to mock, to make him look bad is what you're going to have now. And if, hey, if there are bad policies, you should call them out. But at the same time, if it's just nonsense like this, it's just a waste of time, I think.
Yeah, I don't know why the media is trying to take on this new role of protector of the president when they have done nothing but thrash this man for the last year plus. Now they're pretending like if they don't know where he is, he could be in grave danger, despite the fact that the Secret Service, who is actually there to support and help him and protect him, is there with him already.
And so they're mad because he from what I understand, he kind of ditched the press pool. He didn't tell them where he was going, and they're outraged by that.
Well, apparently this was a terrible violation of protocol, and a lot of these reporters are pretty snarky. One of them said on Twitter, "So Trump ditched his press pool tonight to grab a steak dinner, a terrible violation of protocol that his defenders will probably cheer." And there's a lot more. "Looks like Trump went out for dinner tonight, but the president-elect's press pool was not notified, so journalists are not on the trip." You can just tell that he feels like maybe he wanted to be friends with Mr. Trump and sit across from him.
Yeah, I'm envisioning, like, you know, you're at home and you're expecting your friends to call you to go out to dinner, and they don't. And you're like, and then you hear about it later. "Oh, great dinner." And you're like, "Well, nobody told me.
All your buds went out without you.
Why didn't they invite me?"
It sounds like he just wanted a filet mignon.
Maybe that's what, yeah. Well, could you bring me something back from the dinner? Press pool is supposed to be there. Well, it's funny. I mean, I don't know the protocols. Maybe this is something, but there's a lot of things that presidents do that press aren't there for, I would think. I would hope. You can't have them there all the time, right?
Well, I just finished reading a book partly about Harry Truman, and back in the 1950s, the president could tell you what you were allowed to release to the public at any press conference. There was censoring laws. So he could tell you, like, "No, I don't want that sentence released."
That's still going on with Hillary Clinton and the New York Times.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, it's amazing that now we've come to the opposite extreme. Back when, well, it wasn't extreme, it was for national security, but the president had more control over what his personal statements could be released. But now we get to the point where a man can't even go enjoy a meal with his family without being criticized for it. It's just ridiculous.
They knew where he was. They just weren't invited in the building, I guess.
Yeah, apparently they did know that he was going out to the restaurant because they tweeted about it as it was happening. So it wasn't like they were completely in the dark anyway. And the thing is, even if this was somehow a violation of protocol, which it's hard to imagine that it is, but if it is, this article points out just the blatant hypocrisy. It calls the media water carriers for the Obama administration the last 8 years. They were lied to repeatedly. They were even scoffed at for believing the lies so easily, and yet they kept on preaching whatever Mr. Obama wanted them to say. Meanwhile, the administration would only put out information on Twitter or on Facebook. They'd put out official media releases and not even answer questions on different things. So the media only had the official whitewashed release to go by.
Yeah, and that's always surprised me a little bit about the media, because they take themselves very seriously. And they, like you said, they've been lied to publicly, and Ben Rhodes laughed at him publicly, and but they just seem to not. I thought they'd be more offended by it, like, "Oh, you know, you're not going to treat us that way." But that hasn't been the case. They just keep on keeping on.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable that they haven't learned from the last 8 years, and they're still trying to pin something so trivial on Mr. Trump when they've put up with far more from the current president. The article here even says, CNN even ran the headline, "Trump goes out to dinner tonight," all capitals, words that truly capture the shocking insensitivity of the president-elect's disgraceful behavior.
We're gonna need a sanctuary spot to handle this, a safe space.
Sanctuary steak.
Sanctuary steakhouse, where all people can eat steaks, whether you paid or not. That's the way it should be. Yeah, I mean, I don't understand what the relevance is of covering, like, going out to dinner or something. It doesn't make sense.
The thing is, it was on all of the networks. It was on CNN, NBC.
Slow news day, right?
MSNBC, everything. It's just shocking that this, I thought maybe one outlet might cover it for 30 seconds, if that, but apparently everyone was all over it.
That's crazy. You know, of all the things they could be talking about, there's a lot going on in the world. A lot talked about today in the Trump Daily Radio Show. I mean, what's going on in Europe? What's going on in Russia? What's going on with these other things? And they got to spend all this time being upset about the non-dinner invite. You got to RSVP. Otherwise, how do you know they're coming?
I think I'm going to tell the Big Five networks next time I'm going out for a steak dinner so they can feel included if they are so desired.
We should all email every network, say, just so you know, we're going to dinner right now. Flood. This is where we'll be.
Flood all their inboxes. They'd be very excited at first. Like, hey, somebody emailed us. Oh, wait, no, this is just a prank.
We don't care who this person is.
Yeah, really strange. Well, I guess that's what we can expect to see, unfortunately, out of the media over the next however long it goes on. It's just all the... I mean, that was the way it was towards the end of the Bush administration, where it just got to be unbearable. Like, come on. He's not as bad as you're making him out to be. Like, everything he does is the worst thing ever. It's just too much.
I even saw another article related to the Bush days and Hollywood, really, because it says that one of the highest rated movies of all time, or maybe documentaries, Fahrenheit 9/11, came out while he was in office. A lot of other doom and gloom type movies won awards during his time as the president. And yet there were a lot more cheerful movies that were winning awards while Mr. Obama was in office. And it's almost like Hollywood tailors its message toward their views of whoever's in power.
Absolutely. I mean, even here, if you go to some of the websites, one particular website here, they've got the top story. Their top story in the world is this exact thing. Trump ditches press to dine out with family. And they say that he left the press behind to dine at a swanky restaurant.
Without his posse, by the way.
Yeah.
Just six people, including him. His family members.
It was a swanky restaurant. They keep hitting on the fact that he's got some money and he goes for a nice steak dinner and things like that. Mm. And then, of course, I think his daughter, is it Ivanka? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, his daughter. She got a lot of flack. She wore like an expensive bracelet or something, mm-hmm. the 60 Minutes deal, and then she was trying to sell them. Now that's what they're focusing on. I think, well, fair enough. You want to talk about that, it's your business. But what about the current administration? They haven't spent some bucks. You want to talk about that? The trips, the clothes, the entertainment? I mean, come on.
They haven't gone on hundreds of golf excursions.
Right.
It's just unbelievable. They don't even ever criticize him for that.
Yeah, very lopsided. It's all what they choose to report. And they're kind of the gatekeepers of information. And people kind of look at the headlines and then form their opinions off of that. And, I mean, what the election showed is that there are people that don't believe them, though. I mean, even the latest thing I saw was 70% of those polled don't believe the media. Mm-hmm. And so it's like they're in their own little world. But I think eventually their revenue's got to dry up, right? I mean, if nobody's watching or paying attention, how are you getting paid? Advertisers won't stick around, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy for the media because I think a lot of them are ideological believers, especially of a far-left idea. And so you have that, but then you also have the ethics of the media, which is supposed to be impartial. But that's out the window in modern times. But then you also have the reality that they have to make a profit. They need to get revenue in order to keep going. And so I think you have all those things in conflict because a lot of the decision makers aren't willing to sacrifice their ideological beliefs and for probably what the news media needs to do, which is reorientate itself to the public opinion, to more factual reporting, to get to a different place where people actually start listening to them again. Because in order to get revenue, in order to fulfill the ethics of their business, but I think the ideological patriotism to that is going to overrun any of the more logical routes they should take.
Yeah, that's right. I think I was even reading something that said a lot of these issues with media bias began around 30 years ago. Before that, pretty much news programs actually were running in the red, and the only reason they were on TV was as a public service. They didn't ever produce shows that were meant mainly for entertainment where you would learn very little from the program. But they, I believe it was CBS, put on a show that was almost like the precursor to Baywatch, where it was like a spring break program with a bunch of scantily clad women. The viewership went through the roof because it had been advertised ahead of time. And that's when the people in charge of the news stations realized, well, we don't just have to report the facts. We can make this entertainment. We can sort of, you know, exaggerate certain stories to get more people to watch, things like that. And that's kind of been one of the worst things to ever happen especially when we're talking about a battle of ideas in this country right now.
Right, because the line really blurs between nightly news and Dateline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it news? Is it docudramas? What is it? What are we talking about here? And so I think, and then of course you throw the internet in there and all the information, and boy, it's just one. It's hard to get the straight scoop.
Yeah, and it's hard to tell as well how many people would actually stop watching these networks. I know a lot of people would hate watch those networks, which would still give them viewers, and that would not necessarily take away too much advertising from them. A lot of them, they're so humorous in the way they have a meltdown after the election results and things like that, that people still can't help watching. So in that way, it still is entertainment.
Yeah, and I think a big part of staying out there, as we've learned from the Kardashians, is to be in the headlines, do something, mm-hmm. where people say, oh, did you see what so-and-so did? And a lot of your reporters or your anchors are kind of becoming that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did you see what Megyn Kelly said? Or did you see what Van Jones said? And even though what they're saying probably isn't that relevant, they've still got their names in the headlines. Mm-hmm. And so people know who they are, and that's the name of the game, I guess. That's what they always say. It's better to be loved or hated. Mm-hmm. Nowhere, if people are indifferent to you, you're not going to last.
Yeah, there's definitely a few news sites that they put out. They're definitely in attack mode all the time against Mr. Trump right now. But some of those headlines they have are more intriguing to me. There's one headline, for example, that says, here's Mr. Trump's plans for Asia. And then the other one is from Huffington Post, and it says, here's why Donald Trump should, in fact, accept a salary as the president, because he had just said on Sunday that he wouldn't. And it's like, well, I thought that was incredible, the fact that he wasn't going to get paid for the job. He just wanted to do it as a service to the country. But apparently they're against that as well. And so you click on it, I wonder what they have to say this time. It's not necessarily decreasing their readership, because people are still, even if they disagree with it, they still want to see the ridiculous things that are being said.
Right. Clickbait. It's all about getting those viewers. Thanks for listening to us today here on Trumpet Radio Live. That's all the time we have. Make sure this is for the Key of David, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and Trumpet Hour coming your way today here on KPCG. Thanks for spending some time with us. Have a great rest of your day. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.